Yeah, I'm in my parents-in-law's house. I hope everyone can still see me. I'm in my parents-in-law's house, overlooking the sea, which is very nice. Hold on, it's just gonna work. You probably can't see it. There's some sea, and in on the Northern Irish coast. And I've, as some of you will know, and we've moved a few weeks ago to Northern Ireland to take up a job working for an amazing guitar company called Loudon Guitars. I was supposed to come several weeks ago, and again, as a lot of you may know, I ended up having emergency appendix operation, lay around him for a bit, and then discovered I had sepsis. So managed to spend my last few weeks when I should have been working at Addenbrooke's Hospital as a, I keep wanting to say inmate, resident, patient is the correct word. And so I, yeah, it was a strange few weeks, and then I spent several weeks in bed recovering, and I'm now just about recovered and now working for Loudon. And I wanted to show, some may have seen this anyway, but I wanted to say thank you, because various people amongst well, Histon Methodist and Cotton and Baptist congregations looked after my family and gave us food and things, so we really appreciated that. It was a nice way to end our physical time in Cotton and being reminded of how great so many people are locally. But I wanted to show you this, just this quick video of the company that I'm actually now working for. So I think Dave has it lined up. It should be on the Sheeran website as a video called George and Ed. And this is who I'm working with. Okay. So I'm not here this morning to try and sell people guitars, but I just thought it might give a little bit of context to where we're now based and what we're working for. George Loudon, who's the older guy there, talking to Ed Sheeran, who, those of you don't know, is a rather successful contemporary strumming musician. George Loudon is effectively my boss, although there's a few layers in between. And he's been making guitars for nearly 50 years. He taught himself how to make guitars and is a Christian, and saw these guitars in as a kind of a prayer or an act of worship. He was trying to make the very best, in the same way that often we hope our worship is going to be giving our very best to God. He wanted these guitars to almost be an act of worship to God. And so in the, well, 46 years, I think it is, since then, they've been making and developing these beautiful guitars that are really beautifully made. But then in just the last couple of years, had this partnership develop with Ed Sheeran, where they were trying to make basically more accessible, cheaper guitars, but still good quality, so that younger folk and people could get into them. And they still want those principles of making something beautiful, and they want the business to be a place that's a place where people feel valued and built up. And so, because it's expanding, I ended up being offered this slightly unusual job, which is very different for me, but is quite exciting, and an exciting opportunity to be near Kate's family. So this is good for us. Anyway, I thought I'd give you that by way of introduction. I will refer back to it a little bit as we're reflecting later on Moses, on the journeys which Moses and God's people took, how we discern God's presence, and how we work out how we live in whatever situation we find ourselves in, which are obviously all questions that myself and my family have been considering as we've gone through quite a bit of change over the last few weeks and months. Anyway, I thought we would open with a prayer. So let's be still. This is what I wanted people to have pieces of paper and pens for, although it's not strictly necessary. And we might want to unmute people, because I want a little bit of feedback at this point. What I wanted to talk, the title I was given for today was, I'm continuing, I believe you've been looking through the story of Moses and things over a while. And we've got to the Ten Commandments today, which is a biggie, obviously. And what I wanted to talk about, the title I'd been given was Rules for Life. And I wanted us to consider the issue of rules. So when is there a rule that we're given that is absolutely essential we follow it? And when is there something we might call a rule, but actually maybe we'd see it as more of a guidance or a principle for living? What I thought of, I was thinking this week about things like this. So the two examples I could think of was, don't play. So a rule that we should absolutely follow to the letter might be, don't play on a railway line. Okay. So there's obvious reasons why not to do that. So don't play on a railway line. Simple. Don't do it. Something that might be a bit more open to interpretation, I was thinking about football, is in theory, when you're playing football, you have to, if a ball goes off the side and you have a throw-in, you have to take it from the precise point where the ball goes off. But I don't think I've ever seen a football match where that exact thing happens. The ball goes off and they would take the, someone takes the throw-in vaguely in the principle, in that thing. If they try and sneak too far, like 20 metres down the pitch, the referee might pull them back. But generally, it's a principle. It's like the ball goes off and somewhere nearby, you'll do a throw-on. So I was trying to, I wanted to know if people could think of other examples of those sorts of things, rules that were absolutely essential that we follow them to the letter, and rules that's actually, it's more a principle that, that kind of provides us a way to play a game or do a thing. So did anyone else have any equivalents of those?
Yeah.
How about driving on the left-hand side?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Best for
I was going to say, don't drive through red light.
Well, there is that, yeah.
Or cycle through a red light.
All right.
Or cycle, yeah.
I've seen people driving through red lights.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder about science kind of experiments. You would probably have to do that exactly, but cooking ingredients and amounts and processes.
Make
there's
it up
probably
as you go
a bit
along.
Of, you know, there's probably a bit of anyway there.
Yes.
Or maybe that's where I'm going wrong.
Yeah. There's an episode of The Simpsons where Homer says, "In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics."
Going back to the cooking one, actually cooking, once there's something in cooking where at a certain point, if you've learnt enough of the principles of cooking, you can kind of, you almost don't need the recipes anymore. You kind of you've absorbed what it means to cook, the balance of ingredients that make something taste good, and then you can do it. So the precise measurements, like Emma said, aren't strictly necessary anymore.
Yeah. It's harder with baking a cake though. It's easier to cook savoury food that way, but baking a cake sometimes you have to be more exact.
Because
of the raisins.
I'm more of a curry maker. I make quite a lot of curries, whereas my cake does make quite a lot of cakes. And yes, it's more of a, yeah, you're right. There's more of a precise art involved in cake making. Yeah, curry. Yeah. At a certain point, you just sling in a load of spices, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Don't jump on the sofa.
Don't jump on the sofa.
Yeah.
So how does that, how are you saying that fits into my...
Yeah, that's kind of a rule for keeping your house nice and tidy and your... Yeah, stuff looking good.
None in Simon's house.
But there is so much to be gained by a PlayStation, pushing furniture together, modifying a few blankets, jumping on the sofa. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's kind of, that sort of idea is precisely what I'm, well, not precisely, is vaguely what I'm getting at with, as we're exploring these sort of principles, the Ten Commandments and what it means to live by God in God's way, whatever that is that actually there's some solid stuff there, but there's also, and we all know this, but there's also the importance of interpretation. And there are some, as we'll get to them, there are some things that I think are just stone cold principles that you should, rules that we should stick by, like do not murder, obviously being a prime thing. But a lot of it is about applying what we understand and what we've learned and what we know of God and ourselves, and then and going on from there. So we'll get to that in a little bit more detail, but you'll be glad to know, not too much detail, later on. Although we are now coming to our reading from Exodus, which looks at the comments, and I think someone is lined up to do this.
Yeah. Rob is going to read for us. Shall I mute everyone else, or...
Oh yeah.
No, it was behaving. All right.
Okay, yeah. It's nice. It's actually nice hearing a bit of noise, I have to say.
The reading is from Exodus chapter 20, starting at the beginning. And God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath, or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandment. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honour your father and your mother, so that you may have the land the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbour. You shall not covet your neighbour's house. You shall not covet your neighbour's wife, or his manservant or maidservant, or his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbour. When the people saw the thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke, they trembled with fear. They stayed at a distance and said to Moses, "Speak to us yourself and we will listen, but do not have God speak to us or we will die." Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid. God has come to test you, so that the fear of God will be with you and keep you from sinning." The people remained at a distance while Moses approached the thick darkness where God was.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's got like a big meaty passage to try and read, so thank you, Rob, for that. One of the major differences in my life now, having moved from Cottenham and moved from a particular kind of job to another kind of job, is that for the first time in my life, I have a sort of fairly sizable commute. So I have a journey of about, so in Cottenham my commute used to be either from my hallway into my study, which took about 4 seconds, from my hallway to the community centre, which took about 5 minutes, or my hallway to Histon, which took about 10 minutes. So these were all fairly quick. Actually 10 minutes yeah, it was usually less. So that was something I've never really had as part of my life. And actually now having a commute is actually a really good thing. We live in a place called Hollywood, which is not as glamorous as it sounds, although it is quite nice. And I work in a place called Saintfield, which is in the middle of nowhere. So every morning I have 40 minutes, which is of driving kind of through the outskirts of Belfast, and then out into the countryside and across some really rolling, beautiful, particularly beautiful if the sun's shining, and a bit bleak and poetic when the sun isn't shining, which is, for anyone that's been to Northern Ireland, is almost all of the time, sadly. So I have this lovely, really lovely journey. It's about 40 minutes. Anyone that knows me knows how much I love music. 40 minutes is pretty much the perfect amount of time to listen to most albums. So I get, twice a day, I get to listen to music. People have said, "Oh, listen to some podcasts and educate yourself," and I'm like, "No, I'm just going to use this time to listen to music. There's nothing better." So along the way, so nature is a wonderful way for me, I guess for a lot of people, to connect with God and to reflect. Music always has been for me a really great way of connecting with who I am and who, and I often see and hear God in music. So these are great ways to experience the presence of God. The other interesting thing is, even more so than in England, in Northern Ireland, there are a lot of churches and a lot of church signs up outside churches. And I don't know what people have different views on church signs. I generally find them to be a little bit antagonistic and trite, but people often say something, but they can't help but provoke thought. So there's one, I can't remember, I've slightly taken a different route, but the first day I drove past one that said something like, "Don't forget to give thanks to God today because he didn't forget to wake you up," or something like that. And there's things like, "Oh, try praying," and things like, people, there's just these little messages that, and you know the kind of things I mean. But for me, again, there's, as I'm going on my beautiful journey, as I'm listening to music that I love or which challenges me, there's also these little reminders along the way of these church buildings, but also these questions, and some would have like Bible verses and that kind of stuff. So for me, having gone as most of you know, having gone from being a minister and in ministry and of different kinds for basically almost my entire adult life to suddenly being in a very different role where I'm working for a company which has a great Christian ethos, and there's a lot actually that of about cultivating community and being creative, which is kind of what I've always done in my ministry anyway, but it is a very different way to try and meet with God on a daily basis or discern God's presence on a daily basis. And of course, over the last few months with lockdown to various degrees and churches having to meet in different ways or not meeting physically at all or meeting online, people working and being educated in different patterns, we as God's people in general and society in general have had to learn new ways of living, but also new ways of or adapting the old ways of understanding who God is and God's presence and discerning God's presence with us. And particularly for those who the absolute core of how they meet with God and is by being in a room with people singing songs together, for that to have been removed is quite a dramatic thing, and requires rethinking how we experience God's presence in our lives. So for me, yeah, these last few weeks of being in Northern Ireland and the being in nature, the listening to music, and then just these little nuggets of reminders of Bible verses and sign, like sometimes slightly irritating signs along my journey, have been ways for me to cultivate new experiences of God or developing the ways that I would usually experience God. And so while I was over the last couple of weeks reading the story of Moses, particularly reading around this passage that includes the Ten Commandments, I've been, and I always do this when I'm reading the Bible, I've been asking myself, where am I in this story? So there's obviously the wider story of Moses, there's captivity and there's freedom. Do I feel at this present time, and I would urge you to ask these questions of yourself, am I the Israelites in captivity or am I free? Am I in the wilderness currently or am I in the promised land? Am I traveling or have I arrived? And again, where is God's presence in all of this? How conscious am I of God's presence? In the context of the Ten Commandments, there's these, at the start of that passage, there's the thunder and the smoke and the fear, but there's the love of God. But this starting point for the exploration of God's rules is the presence of God. So for us, if we're ever to learn, I think, how we might live as Christians, the starting point has to be being conscious of and aware of the presence of God. And the passage which Rob read for us starts with, I am the Lord your God. So for us as Christians coming together to worship or finding our own ways to experience God, the starting point is, who is God? Who is God for me now? Who is God for us now? And so as we come together to worship today, but as we live our lives through the week, reminding ourselves and being reminded of who God is at the core. The passage goes on and says, so it says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of slavery. And again, I think there's the starting point. I am the Lord your God is a reminder of who is reminding us who God is. But he then reminds the Israelites what he has done. So he says he's brought them out of slavery. And for me, I don't know, again, I don't know about you, and people have their different ways of living a Christian life, of course. But for me, I find it quite easy to forget what God has done in my life and in the wider world. And so actually, it's a good practice. And for me, one of the things I'm trying to do on this journey where I'm going, gosh, this is a very new situation for me, is going, what is it that God has done in my life? What is it that God has done in the wider Christian life? And remind myself of what it is that God has been up to in my life. And I think that's a good practice for me and for us day by day and week by week, to whatever we're going through today, to remind ourselves where God has been up to this point. The passage in Exodus goes on to talk, says, for God reminding them that there should be no gods before me. This idea that there shouldn't be idols. We shouldn't have idols. God should be the priority in our life. And again, I think this is a good principle. Whatever we're doing, whatever our job is, our home life is, our educational situation is, reminding ourselves who God is, what he's done, and where his position should be in our life. And that idea that there shouldn't be idols. I grew up in a church that didn't really do much to do with Lent and those kind of the church calendar. But actually, as I became a Methodist minister and then part of Methodist churches, the practice of Lent, where you try and strip away the things that come between us and God, I found that to be a really good practice. And of course, that doesn't have to happen just during Lent. The idea of stripping away those idols, stripping away those things that take our focus from God, is another really good practice. It talks about, and this I think is the perfect reminder example of what we were talking about earlier about rules and principles. The Sabbath, I think, is one of the greatest gifts that the church has to, and the Jewish tradition has to offer the world. This principle of rest, of taking rest, of setting aside time, especially for God, and especially to rest from the labors of our week, I think is absolutely key. And there's different, some people would observe it very strictly, but actually I think it's the principle more than the having to do it in a certain way that really matters. And so we come on to the commandments themselves. And as I said earlier, do not murder seems to be one of those commands that I don't think we need to debate too long and hard to decide that there's that's one of those that we should just, I think we just agree we'll stick to. It's a bit of a don't play on the railway situation. But there are other rules and other commandments, in not just in the Ten Commandments, but elsewhere in the Old Testament, where I think there's more ambiguity. They're less about being precise rules to live by, more about principles for living. And as it goes through the commandments, there's a fairly simple, as is often the case in the deep stuff of the Bible, there's fairly simple principles which we could follow. It starts off, as we've already said, by putting God in God's rightful place in our lives, acknowledging who he is, acknowledging that what he's done, and acknowledging that there shouldn't be anything else which we prioritize above God. Then it goes on to talk, again, very simply about the ways in which we should take care of and honor our families. And then it moves on to our conduct in wider society and the principles involved then. And of course, when it was originally written, the concept of neighbors and the concept of wider society was a much narrower view. We now, for better or for worse, and I think basically for better, we can't get away from knowing the impact our actions have, not just on those in our homes, not just on those in our village, but also in a wider society, not just in our country, but around the world. We know that our how we choose to spend our money, where we choose to buy things from, how we choose to travel, all of those things have an impact beyond our close proximity to us. And so, again, I don't think the Bible spells out precisely how to live, precisely how we should use our money, precisely how we should travel. Of course it doesn't, but it does in the Ten Commandments and elsewhere, it does provide principles which are taking care of those in wider society, taking care of those not just closest to us, but further away as well. And as we come to the end of those Ten Commandments, we also get to God saying again, do not be afraid. And for me, as I've been reflecting on that this week, it obviously has echoes and brings it down the generations to the hundreds of years later of God's perhaps more tender and gentle interactions with Mary through the angel Gabriel. Do not be afraid, that echo of a tender and kind and loving God who wants the best for us, and also, as with Mary, wants us to be part of his call to serve the world. And again, once you're up in the New Testament, you get to some of the really, really profound stuff, even perhaps more than the Old Testament. And I, this week, reflecting on Jesus being asked what the greatest commandment was and what the most important of the laws of the Old Testament were, and him simply reflecting back on that commandment to love the Lord your God with your whole heart, your whole mind, your whole spirit, your whole strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And it talks about that summing up the whole of the law, and all of the law being contained within that. And actually, again, there's no specific instructions on how to live there, but that principle of loving God, loving ourselves, loving our neighbor, and living a life out of those principles, I think, is absolutely key to the Christian life. For me, it's also a reminder that our starting point is always love, loving God, loving others. And also that the importance of interpretation, that we need God doesn't spell out exactly how to live, but we do have these principles. And as churches, as Christians working together, as Christians interacting with those of other faiths and other philosophies, we can make sense of these principles in our lives and in the lives of others, wherever it is we're living and whatever it is we're doing with our lives. So I'd like us to just be still before we sing our next song. I'd like us to, in the relative quiet of our own homes, to spend a few moments reflecting on who God is, reflecting on what God has done in our lives, and asking God, how would he want us to live this day? Let's be still just for a few moments together. Thank you very, very much for having me today. It's strange. It's very strange. It's very strange to be here at a distance, and I do miss Cottenham greatly. But I have to not think about it too much.
Oh, bless you.
Well, we've really enjoyed having you here. Thank you.